Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the Newsbusters podcast. It's Friday. We are working on several things. One of the things that intrigued me this morning, just listening in the car, discussing the George Stephanopoulos interview with Alec Baldwin. And I was sort of disturbed by the music that went underneath the snippet of the Baldwin interview they did on NPR. And it's just sort of like, when you start using sappy music under this, is it news anymore or is it just entertainment? Are you trying to create this sort of movie atmosphere where Alec Baldwin cries for the camera?
Your emotions are so clearly so right there on the surface. You felt shock. You felt anger. You felt sadness. Do you feel guilt? You said you're not a victim, but is this the worst thing that's ever happened to you?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Because I think back and I think of what could I have done.
Alec Baldwin Unscripted, the newsmaking special event, tonight at 8, 7 Central on ABC.
It just gets goopy. But anyway, at the end of the NPR segment with their TV critic, Eric Deggans, who used to be TV critic for the Tampa Bay Times, we used to tussle on the phone about all things media bias. And Deggans concluded by saying that Baldwin gave a master class in how to get ahead of the news cycle. And this is where you ask yourself the question, well, then was ABC just simply used? ABC became a vehicle, just like Robin Roberts interviewing Jussie Smollett. That's not to say that Baldwin's putting forward a hoax of some kind, although I think the claims he's trying to make here about how he was not responsible, firearms experts we know with our old friend Steve Gutowski is suggesting it's looking less than plausible. I mean, the experts are going to have their things to say about all of this. But I'm just concerned about this whole idea of ABC News is doing a celebrity interview, putting all of its sympathy or empathy with Alec Baldwin. You know, where's the interview with Helena Hutchins' family? We would do it if we could get it, I imagine. But I mean, what you're seeing here is a rather imbalanced picture. Speaking of imbalance, Scott Whitlock was also showing this morning that the networks aren't exactly noticing that the Biden's Christmas decorations have six stockings for the Biden grandchildren. But wait, there are seven Biden grandchildren, but they don't want to count the illegitimate stripper baby. This would be a girl named Navy Jones, who Hunter Biden sired in one of his dissolute periods. Well, like a lot of things when it comes to the Bidens and Hunter, the networks all sort of rally around and try to edit all of that stuff out. You know, they're here at Christmas. The coverage of the Biden Christmas decorations is going to be all positive, when their coverage of the Melania Christmas decorations was pretty much a horror show. So I think what Scott found was that there was no mention of Navy Jones. This is just not a story that any of us need to do. This is the same set of networks that couldn't stop talking about Stormy Daniels, but they can't talk about Hunter Biden's stripper baby mama. So, I mean, this is where, well, we're going to carefully edit the facts because we want a beautiful Christmas picture. Now, the other thing I heard on NPR this morning that intrigued me was they had an underwriting announcement promoting CNBC's The News with Shepard Smith. You were supposed to tune in to the Shepard Smith show to get context and perspective, which, of course, are words I associate constantly with Dan Rather. These are the words Dan Rather used to describe, you know, his full-throated Edward R. Murrow bias. Put the news in context and perspective. Well, obviously this show is not doing well in the ratings. One chart I looked at said that in his time slot, Shepard Smith on cable comes in number 57. So he probably needs some underwriting announcements. Even Brian Stelter, who no doubt used Shep Smith for his book Hoax, Shep Smith and all of Shep Smith's buddies inside Fox News were probably all of his sources, or many of his sources. Even Brian Stelter said, yeah, no, he's not going to get good ratings at CNBC. Now, that's in part Brian Stelter being a CNN partisan. And as we know, CNN doesn't have great ratings either. We will discuss more of this. What's going on with CNN? What's going on with Steve Doocy at Fox? How he's making trouble for Jen Psaki? All of that coming up with Curtis Houck. But wait, one thing. My boy Ben and Gabriel Hayes of MRC Culture went down to the Supreme Court on Wednesday to interview people outside the court. It was quite a scene. I believe pro-lifers outnumbered the pro-abortion people, but they were there to capture the scene and interview people. And that interview segment now you can see on the MRC TV channel at YouTube, or go over to Rumble. Rumble Bumble. And we're back in the Newsbusters podcast with distinguished managing editor Curtis Houck. He works so hard. He works harder than I do.
Oh, well.
I know. It's a contest. It's a workaholics convention.
Mm-hmm.
But as usual, Curtis is known first and foremost on Twitter and on Newsbusters for keeping track of the Jen Psaki show, and specifically Doocy time. So we are going to spend some time on what has happened lately, where Jen Psaki's had to deal with questions from Steve Doocy, and as usual, good questions. So we started the week with COVID and the border.
Yeah, so Monday's show returned after Thanksgiving, and he really cut right to the chase, because Omicron's been in the news, talking about, first and foremost, the ban on travel from southern African countries.
No longer racist.
No longer racist, unless you're Yamiche Alcindor, then of course it is racist. But Doocy started by pointing out, before Joe Biden was president, he said that COVID travel restrictions on foreign countries were, quote, hysterical, xenophobia, and fear-mongering. So what changed? And of course, Psaki, like most times, she insisted that Doocy needs to put it in full context, that he's somehow missing something. That's one of her tropes that she uses. She sometimes plays dumb, like she didn't hear what you asked her. But other times she says, you know, we need to back up here. We need to put it in full context. It's important to talk about facts because we're all about facts here. But she went with the context trope this time, and she noted that, well, actually, he was critical of the way that the former president put out, I believe, a xenophobic tweet talking about COVID and the Wu flu or something like that.
And Twitter corrected them on that, right?
Correct.
That there was no tweet.
Our friend Matt Whitlock, not unrelated to Scott Whitlock,
yes,
pointed that out in a huge fact check on Twitter. I encourage people to look at. You know, he also said that, you know, when Biden put Trump put travel restrictions into place, Biden said, quote, a move that further diminished the U.S. in the eyes of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
They always do that.
Oh, yeah. Diminish the eyes in the world. But he was just talking about a tweet. That's all it was. That's all it was. So Doocy knew he wasn't really going to get anything. And sometimes, you know, I know some people listening, sometimes you want to press harder and harder and harder sometimes. And I know you, Tim.
Yeah.
As a reporter, you kind of got to, at a certain point, things become diminishing returns.
Yes.
In terms of not getting an answer. We'll see later in the week. He kept pressing on certain issues, but on this one, it was I think he realized he was not going to get a further answer. So the second one that he went to on Monday was talking about Biden being maskless in Nantucket, which is just totally amazing. Before Thanksgiving, he pointed out the fact that Biden went to Nantucket to stay at a billionaire's compound, just as Americans are struggling to pay for just about everything. What message did that send? So he goes to Nantucket, and then he goes in a store where there's a mask requirement, and he's not wearing a mask. Psaki was caught in a tough spot here. This is one of those Biden gaffes where there's really no way out of it. So she tried to say, the president is someone who follows the recommendations and advice of the CDC.
Yeah, okay.
Oh.
Not in this case. Or,
he was
or,
shopping in a store, and on the glass inside, outside it said, face covering required, and we could see him inside, and his face was uncovered. That was Juicy's follow-up.
Yeah, I mean, I it's a good question to ask. It's an optics question. And, you know, for me as a human being, my answer is, if that says masks required, sometimes I go, all right, you don't need my business. I'm double vaccinated, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, I'm triple now. I mean, it's just, it's very stupid. But he did point out, Deucey correctly there at the end, he really hit on the actual, what I would ask in terms of these optics questions. Is there a concern when the president says, please wear your mask indoors in public settings around people, and he doesn't do that, that's going to make it harder to get people to follow him?
No question.
Is pointed here. And then also just to close out, he also asked about remaining in Mexico. A number of reporters have as well. Saki stuck to the answer that he agrees that he still believes it's racist and inhumane and all these other things. But
they're making him do it?
They're making him do it. The judges are making him do it. So that's fine. We're still not quite to Supreme Court rulings nullification yet. We might, who knows?
Well, I just, you know, these are good questions, and they're holding him accountable, and this is the kind of question you would want them all to ask him. And I don't think they come off as, they certainly come off as questions that are not intended to make Biden look good. I don't think they're necessarily seen as right-wing questions. I don't
know. And then the last one before we move to later in the week is, he also asked on Monday, I know a lot of listeners care about this, Waukesha.
Yes.
He asked why Biden hasn't gone to Waukesha.
Because we remember he went to Kenosha to meet with the Blake family.
Correct. And this is a thing presidents do a lot of times, you know.
Especially when they say, well, Biden didn't have time to go to the wall. It's the same sort of thing. It's like, no, you're picking and choosing which optics or which videos or tableaus you want. I mean, he was in my wife's stomping grounds this week at Dakota County Technical College for some, you know, one of the usual, let's try to promote Build Back Better. So, I mean, obviously, to say he doesn't have time to go to the border or he doesn't have time to go to Waukesha, nobody should.
Yeah, that was Saki's answer, that it is, it takes a lot of resources to get a president to go somewhere.
Yeah.
But the problem is, we all know, and everyone listening knows, unless you're Brian Stelter, David Folkenflik, or somebody like that, that if Sean Spicer, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and Kayleigh McEnany, the three that gave briefings, said something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they may have for certain things.
Yeah.
They would get torn to shreds. Well, CNN would say, where's the dereliction of leadership. He's no comforter in chief because he's not going there. We don't have the photo op of him hugging the sobbing mom.
Right.
You know, he's not standing there at the wall of flowers. And they just move on.
Well, and you could honestly say that Trump wasn't really interested in being the comforter in chief. Democratic presidents very much are, from Bill, I feel your pain, Clinton, Obama. Obama loved being
Amazing Grace,
the comforter in chief. Yeah. Well, let's not forget how much they loved moments like that. You know, the president saying Amazing Grace. None of us go to church, but we thought it was amazing.
Yeah. It's not my top. It's my second favorite Deucey exchange of the week came on Tuesday when he talked to Dr. Fauci.
Ah.
So he said a relatively benign question. You could argue he was setting a trap, but we'll just roll with it. As you advise the president about the possibility of new testing requirements for people coming into the country, does that include everybody? Okay, all right. Where is he going with this? Fauci said anybody and everybody who's coming into the country needs to get a test within 24 hours of getting on the plane to come here.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. We all know where this is going. Deucey then says, quote, but what about people who don't take a plane and just these border crossers are coming in huge numbers? Uh-oh. Fauci then, you know, doing his thing where he waits to weigh in sometimes on certain things. Like, you know, he got mad about being asked by Margaret Brennan about Ted Cruz and Ted Cruz should be prosecuted and Lara Logan needs to, like, you know, lose her job and everything else, even if it was kind of a crazy statement. He said that's a different issue. We still have Title 42, so there are protections at the border.
Yeah, no, this that sort of question and answer sort of underlines what we all know, and that is Dr. Fauci is a bureaucrat first and foremost. He may be a doctor, he may be a scientist, but he is first and foremost a government bureaucrat giving a government bureaucrat answer, which he's done a whole lot of. I mean, I think he was obviously giving government bureaucrat answers under Trump. People, the reporters always seemed upset he wasn't anti-Trump enough. And in this case, yeah, now he's, I think he's having a bad period now that, you know, for him to lose his objectivity, if there is any, and going after Ted Cruz in a Margaret Brennan interview that was very soft. I was honestly looking forward to what is Ducey going to ask Fauci?
Well, and what was interesting, we're talking about Ducey, but friend Philip Wegman as well, he asked Fauci about elective surgeries. Kathy Hochul, yep, up in New York has shut down elective surgeries in preparation, not because of Omicron like cases flooding hospitals, in preparation for.
Yeah.
And Fauci's like, well, I don't really want to get into that. You know, that's not really my place.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
See, no, yes, it is your place, Dr. Fauci. I mean, that's where, yeah, you get, that's where you get angry. And it's like, no, answer the question.
Yeah. It's, that one in particular, people are still talking about it here on Friday, how absurd that answer was. So Ducey also asked Psaki then about variants, and Biden was going to shut down, said he was going to shut down the virus, and he didn't. But the one that was great, he pointed out that at the second debate, because everyone's talking about the first one, and Trump may have tested positive, and then right, he had a false negative and everything else. But then he brought up the other debate when Biden said anybody who's responsible for that many deaths of COVID at the time, which was 220,000 Americans, should not remain as president of the United States of America. So, quote, is that still the standard now that more Americans have died under President Biden than Donald Trump?
Oh, no. I believe that was the final debate. And yes, I think Biden, again, I think the problem here is the pomposity, the utter lack of humility about what this virus was going to do and mutate, is the whole idea of Biden was what? He was implying there that Trump was responsible for hundreds of thousands of deaths. That's what the whole media played that game. And now we're here, and Ducey's bringing it home. And he's saying, now the death toll's over 700,000. To what extent is Biden, you know, going to say, gosh, I guess I didn't get the virus under
control? Everyone recalls Olivia Nuzzi early on, yeah, in the pandemic when we crossed the number of soldiers that died in Vietnam. Right. And she said, you know, how do you feel about, she asked Trump, like, you feel responsible for all that. How does that make you feel?
Yep.
And Psaki's answer was, of course, the first thing she went to is, well, at least Biden didn't say, you know, you should drink bleach.
Well, let me ask you this question. This is probably what we would call a rhetorical question. Curtis watches all the Psaki briefings. How much has Olivia Nuzzi been there?
That's a good question. I do recall she may have been there once and actually had a really good question. I can't recall right now what it is, but she actually had a very good, I recall, well, it was once, but yeah, she's not, she and lover Ryan Lizza are not frequent flyers.
Right. I just think, and he asked a very jerky question of Trump too, that was right along the same lines that Trump was responsible for every death. And yes, I think Olivia Nuzzi sounded some notes after Biden won of the notion that there was going to be this airless, you know, bubble around Biden.
Here's what it was. Yes, she showed up on April 12th. April 12th.
Curtis, okay, brought the laptop.
I wrote this. She asked about, why do we need to still wear masks after we got both our shots? Because again, this was very early on before we had variants, we had anything else. When the government was saying, you know,
that's when you get double vaccinated, you don't have to.
Right, exactly. And what's the deal? Why are we still having to wear masks here in the briefing room and all this?
Which they're still doing.
Which is what they're still doing. So yeah, I mean, it goes to this, you know, partisan question about playing, you know, who's playing for the cameras here. But, you know, that was on Wednesday, because we didn't have one on Tuesday because Biden was on said field trip to Minnesota. So then the other one, and Friday devolved into jobs numbers and all sorts of other topics. But I want to spend some time on Thursday, because Thursday's was hilarious, because he started with this question, bringing up departures in Kamala Harris's staff.
Ah, yes.
Is the vice president not satisfied with the staffing that she has had so far, or do people just not want to work for her anymore?
Yeah, I mean, and look, this is the question they would all be asking if people kept leaving Pence's staff at the near the end of the first year. They would all make a deal out of this. And obviously, some of the insider publications, I know Politico has done this, have sort of suggested that the Harris staff does not get along with the Biden staff. And, you know, these camps aren't getting along. And this is the kind of thing you would expect political reporters to do.
Especially insidery kind of places like Politico. But yes.
Yeah, but you would. But even so, we would expect that CNN and MSNBC, who are constantly having these reporters on, whether it's John King or whether it's Nicole Wallace, or they're all putting political people.
Sam Stein's been writing a lot of these pieces. He's on Morning Joe all the time. And yeah. It's not story A. It's something, something January 6th, something, something Ron Death Santis.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, they said Simone Sanders is leaving. And the first thought I had was, has she been on TV this year? Not that she has to be, not that that was right. necessarily going to be her job. But I think it goes back to the whole idea of how not only was Kamala Harris pretty much invisible and not granting interviews, the people who were hired to work for Kamala Harris, who had done a lot of extensive TV punditry, just vanished.
Right.
It's just interesting.
I also have to point out, Simone Sanders is 31 years old. And either in 2020 or 2019, she released a memoir.
Well.
Okay. During the campaign season.
Well, I mean, so there, if somebody will pay you to write that book. But yeah, I mean, it is just interesting to me. It's just the same way, Curtis, you'll remember when Psaki came in and she said, we have all this amazing diversity of people on the communication staff. And it wasn't just Karine Jean-Pierre. It was several other people. And I think Karine's the only one that's done a briefing other than Jen Psaki.
Correct.
So they haven't exactly lived up to, oh, we're going to have 4 or 5 or 6 people doing the briefing.
Yeah, TJ Ducklow.
Well,
rip.
He was not part of the diversity and inclusion, though. He was the cis white male.
He was the one cis white guy that they had. But just real quick before we move on, Ducey also talked about cops and lawlessness. And what was so funny about that answer is Psaki conveyed that many people have conveyed that COVID is the reason there's a spike in crime. And she cited another one of the quote unquote root causes, because we know they love that buzzword, is guns and gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gun violence, but gun violence already is crime. So that's a whole other thing that people were making fun of. And then Ducey said, so when a huge group of criminals organize themselves and they go to loot a store, CVS, Nordstrom, Home Depot until the shelves are clean, you think that's because of the pandemic? Psaki said, yes.
What else is she going to say?
Oh, it's just amazing to get that on camera. And I just have to say at the other end of the spectrum, just we're praising Ducey here. One of the narratives this week from the liberals, we had Tamara Keith from NPR, McClatchy's Brian Lowry, Wall Street Journal's Sabrina Siddiqui. I believe Christian Welker asked Biden about this today, which is vaccine mandates. Mandates for domestic flights.
Yes.
They are really pushing this and making this a narrative. So, folks, if you have not been seeing this, this is something to really keep tabs on. Just think the absurdity of it. You know, I flew to Georgia, to Atlanta and Savannah in January. So the idea that a flight that short would require me to show proof of vaccination is so absurd. But this is where they're headed.
Well, it's interesting, though. There's two obvious points here, Curtis, as you know. One is you're suggesting, and you're right, even when they ask tough questions about Biden, those answers or question and answers don't often make the air. That's what you're suggesting. Mm-hmm. But it also suggests that these reporters are concerned that a vaccine mandate for domestic flights is not going to be good for the Democrats in the midterms. That's, I think, what's also sort of behind it. We'll take it. It's a good question to ask.
Right.
It should receive some skepticism. And again, this is where it's like what the liberal media always misses is, yes, why are people upset about COVID? Well, one, because it hasn't gone away. And Biden promised it was going to go away, which was dumb on his part.
Yeah,
but it worked for him. He won. But this whole idea of we've been double-track vaccinated, and now we're going to be triple vaccinated, you're still going to say, wear your mask, and by the way, you need to be COVID tested before you fly. I mean, it's, where does it end?
Right, where does it end? And what's crazy is it goes to John Heilman's insane point on Morning Joe yesterday that said Republicans are the party that doesn't want COVID to end.
Yeah, that would seem to be wrong if you ask me. Now, you one of the other things Curtis is very good at, we all expect him to do, is lower himself into the craziness that is the readout, which, you know, some people might say, well, I don't see you guys doing as much about Maddow. I wrote a column on Maddow this week, maybe just to balance it out. But, we are not doing a bunch of crazy Larry O'Donnell. We're not doing a lot of Chris Hayes. Well, that's just because joy is joy. Now, Curtis, right. I don't know if this is a theological note, but you've taken to calling her soulless joy.
Oh, soulless joy, hateful joy, venomous joy, all these different descriptors.
Joyless joy.
I think I've used that one before, too. At this point, I'm just, next week, folks, I might use a Deucey for the Holidays headline or whatever. Because, New York Post should hire me. At some point, is a side thing to write headlines.
Only as a side thing, Curtis.
It's a side thing, yes. But joy has had quite the week. We'll just point out, I'll go the other way. I'll start this week and then work our way backwards. Last night, she had Vivek Murthy on, and it was so telling about
the Surgeon General.
Surgeon General.
Another nonpartisan official.
Nonpartisan official appearing
on a very partisan show.
Oh, yes. She complained that my adult children live in New York. They've been screenshotting and sending me info on Omicron. It's really frightening because it feels like it is the next sort of wave of the pandemic, and it feels kind of unstoppable. How much more dangerous is the Omicron variant than Delta?
Dun, dun, dun!
And of course, the best part about it, in my opinion, was Vivek Murthy, like, as academically as possible, he was like, what? We still don't know. He was like, well, Joy, we still don't know a lot about this variant.
True.
It could be bad, but right now we haven't seen it. And then he pointed out how, of the dozen cases probably or less that we know of right now in the United States, the ones that we really have a couple of days of information about had mild symptoms, they were vaccinated, and they've recovered.
Well, I imagine, Curtis, we can speak for Joy's paranoia for 2 seconds. These people always measure COVID by the cases and not by the symptoms. And that's something that I think they're worried that this variant is more infectious, even if it's not as damaging. But what else did we get from Joy?
Oh, well, yes. It's so weird. She pointed out to Chris Murphy talking about the school shooting in Michigan that it strikes me that Republicans are willing to go to the wall for some things. The right to have as many guns as possible and shoot up wherever you want.
Yeah. Oh, come on.
Says the lady who thought Steve Scalise had it coming in 2017.
Oh,
here we go. And then she also said Republicans believe in the right to cough on as many people as you want with COVID and get as many people sick as you want.
Yeah.
And
these are Curtis, what we call bad faith arguments.
Exactly. And in earlier in that show on Thursday, Wednesday, she said she's worried that despite being triple vaccinated, she'll still have a breakthrough case.
Well, nobody wishes that on anyone. Nobody needs that. But I mean, but this raises the obvious point of you get mocked for being an unvaccinated cougher on people, but you don't tend to see them mocked for people who are triple vaccinated and still won't leave their house.
Correct. Right. Exactly. That they're scared to go to the Macy's.
Yeah.
Because not everybody in there is going to be triple vaccinated and wearing a mask like they are, or wearing an N95 mask.
Yeah. So I'm just saying it's that kind of a paranoia is equally as sort of, if you want to present the RFK Jr.'s is unglued, and I do.
Yeah, we do. I do.
You should, yes. People who, the vaccinations should count for something.
Right. What was the entire point of what Donald Trump was doing? That was one of his biggest selling points of his campaign, Operation Warp Speed. Anyway.
Yes. Well, I did an item this week, and I want to get to abortion. That, yeah, they tried to blame Trump for the Omicron variant in Politico. That's got to be one of the lamest hit pieces we've seen. And of course, all with anonymous officials who worked under Trump,
right,
probably Democrat careerists.
I wouldn't be surprised if somebody like the guy that Tapper had on yesterday, remember Rick Bright, folks?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, that guy with the voice, he went on. He sounds like Philip Rucker a little bit. He went on. He went on 60 Minutes, and he had that whole big thing. He was, you know, I'm sure Olivia Troy has like some candle for him or something like that,
so,
in her background.
Soulless Joy,
yes,
and her friend, her friend Ellie Mistal with the marshmallow head. What do you call him? Something Fat Albert.
Yeah, Virad Mehed on Twitter calls him Mad Scientist Fat Albert.
That's it.
Or some people say, like, discount Don King. Another one. Don King wore it better. So Joy had some ghoulish arguments, and so did Ellie Mistal. Like, she said that the Supreme Court told 166 million women in America that they could reduce you to a secondary citizen. And then she had this entire thing that she kept going back to on Wednesday about how babies are going to be left in mass on the doorsteps of firehouses.
What?
It's like,
where does
this come from?
It's like, what are you sniffing before? You picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Ellie Mistel then says, a fetus is not deserving of full personhood rights because, he says, therefore, it would diminish the rights of women.
Okay. Well, this is the fight, is that basically they're saying, In the struggle between, in the war, talk about the war on women. You know, they never say the war on the unborn. You ever notice that? War on women to defend the unborn. But they do obviously deny the personhood. That's what he's doing.
You're right. And they just, like, Joy found it disturbing and, quote, frankly offensive that anyone in the pro-life argument would say that overturning Roe v. Wade would be as cataclysmic as overturning Plessy.
Well, this is where and we've got Joy and we've got Whoopi Goldberg, you know, just going nuts about anybody curtailing the right to abortion. And it's like, again, don't come to us with your Black Lives Matter button if you're all about let's have as many babies aborted as possible. And we all know from the stats that there's a larger percentage of Black women having abortions. And they'll, of course, blame racism and a lack of socialist health care.
And Mistel said, oh, women have a right to abortion, and therefore rights in general are inalienable. So therefore, transit property, abortion is an inalienable right, which is just absolutely
cockamamie nonsense. It goes back to this whole concept that I was talking about in the column, which is that they believe, they become libertarians or people who talk about inalienable rights on this one issue.
Right.
That when it's about abortion, then it is the most sacred liberty. These are people that don't like the concept of liberty anywhere else. Generally, usually that's the property of a running dog capitalist. You know, I tried to use that phrase, and Scott Whitlock was like, what's running dog capitalist? I said, well, that's very Cold War.
Yeah, I don't get it.
This is where I mark my age. But this is sort of the sort of thing that Soviet propagandists used to say, you running dog capitalists. And we just would use it because it sounds funny, right? Running dog capitalists. So I had to edit it for the young people.
And these people are the same folks. I should just point out, you know, if you skipped ahead in the podcast, we just finished talking about Joy Reid being upset about the Omicron variant and White House reporters talking about COVID vaccine mandate and testing requirements for domestic flights. And these are the same people that are like, oh, abortion. Okay.
Well, I just think that, yes, the thread here is that in the Trump years, they were always talking about impending authoritarianism. And now they get very upset when you suggest that there's such a thing as COVID authoritarianism. And he's like, no, this is for your good. It's not tyranny when it stops the spread. So just as much as we would say it's unfair to compare Fauci to Hitler, we made a list. You know, Lydia, the intern here, was doing this. I said, let's make a list of all of the times CNN compared Trump and the Republicans to the Nazis. It was a constant refrain. So if you don't want to use the Nazi thing for Fauci, you shouldn't be using the Nazis for anything the Republicans proposed on COVID.
Yeah, and I just wrote one more thing that was just so Mistel made inadvertently engaged in a self-own when he was upset and seemingly confused at the fact that, quote, conservatives want you to think that a fetus whose pre-viability means it cannot exist outside the mother, cannot live outside the womb, should have the same legal rights as full-grown black people in this country. And the fact that it doesn't is some kind of miscarriage of justice, no pun intended. And that the people who shouldn't have rights are the women carrying the fetus. Aside from the last part, that's exactly right. Which is hilarious that he'd be like, this is so terrible. And the conservatives, what the hell are they thinking? What?
It's where it's like, you know, we could watch a 9-minute video of a neck hold on George Floyd. But these people never wanted you to watch videos where people at Planned Parenthood talked about how they crushed skulls or didn't crush skulls because the corpses could go on sale. They always have a very distinct sense of which human rights horrors they want to obsess over. And then what we would consider a human rights horror in the abortion, they see as a sacred right.
Yeah, exactly. And on the legitimacy front, to put a pin on it, is Kavanaugh and Clarence Thomas, the presence of them upset Joy Reid.
Oh, yes.
She said it made me feel some kind of way to hear two men who were credibly accused of violating the sanctity of women, you know, both got away with it, stand up and sort of soberly argue whether or not women are owned by the state. Of course, number one, women are not, that's not what they're saying. It's such a cartoonish argument by Joy to say that conservatives believe women should be owned by the state. This is the same network that Melissa Harris-Perry did a promo saying, your children don't belong to you. Your children belong to the state.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one. And number two, you know, anyone with a pulse paying attention here again in this podcast should know about how the claims against Clarence Thomas and Brett Kavanaugh, which is more vivid, I guess, in people's memories since it happened in 2018 and not 1991.
Yes.
Are totally bogus. But Joy's going around saying, without evidence, where are the without evidence fact checks, by the way, that this is the case. Therefore it's illegitimate.
Well, this is one of those things where you could be Bill Clinton and sexually harass and assault women because you had the right position on abortion. It was really the same way for Senator Bob Packwood. It's now this has been the same for Andrew Cuomo, and that is it's okay if you're a sexual harasser as long as you have the right opinion on abortion. This seems to be their take on Kavanaugh and Thomas, but you're exactly right, and I'm old enough to remember that stupid weekend of Clarence Thomas being accused of things that they had zero proof for. And Christine Blasey Ford, at least Anita Hill could plausibly state she worked for Clarence Thomas and knew Clarence Thomas. Blasey Ford didn't have none of that.
Yeah, couldn't say when it was, where it happened, who else was there. I mean, there were so many things that were wrong with that.
Now, to wrap, I wanted to do a minute or two on... since we mentioned Andrew Cuomo, we should bring in poor Chris Cuomo, now suspended. I would confess I have argued or stated that he is the highest rated quote-unquote talent on CNN. You say, but wait.
Oh, and I also said the same as well, that he is, Tucker Carlson said, him being, you know, saying he's the highest rated host on CNN is like saying he's the most famous, the top caterer in Uzbekistan.
Yes.
But actually, it's not true. So Stelter claimed in his Wednesday newsletter of hate, as I wrote at Newsbusters, that he said November's cable news ratings numbers came out on Wednesday, and Cuomo Primetime was the network's number one show of the month among total viewers. Okay. Well, we're going to go over to TV Newser, which Stelter founded, by the way.
Yeah.
As a student at Towson.
Right.
And our friend Road Minnesota, both using Nielsen numbers, to show that Cuomo actually was in second place. Because basic math would show that Anderson Cooper's 786,000 total viewers on average for the month of November is more than Cuomo Primetime's 774,000 total viewers. Oops. To put those numbers in perspective, by the way, how low they are, those are CNN's top two shows in total viewers. They lose to all but one Fox News show. There's 16 weekday shows on Fox News Channel. The only show that they beat, Fox and Friends First, which airs from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. Eastern. And overall, that's 24th and 25th out of all cable news shows, and they are behind half of MSNBC's programming, including every show from 4 p.m. to midnight and Morning Joe. And then if you go to the demo, it's even worse. He's in fourth place behind Aaron Burnett, Cooper and Wolf Blitzer.
Well, now you're just going to shows that we don't, we only have so many hours in the day. It was like, yeah, when's the last time we blogged Aaron Burnett? It's too bad. But we should mention, now that you mentioned it, Road Minnesota at Twitter at R-O-A-D-M-N.
Yes.
For all of your ratings numbers type of stuff, it's a good follow.
He does charts every single day, both on the demo, total viewers, pie charts in terms of which... network has the percentage of news viewers. He also does the percentage of each hour of the total cable news ratings. You know, like Fox, just making up a number here, had, 65% of the share between the three channels, and then breaks down so on and so forth. It's fascinating, that one in particular, because CNN is now in the teens in terms of percentage of the share of viewership here, to show how puny they are. You're seeing things like 17-18%, and then the other two are between MSNBC and Fox, and people are saying, well, guess what, if you're progressive, you're gonna go to MSNBC and Joy Reid, because A, it's unglued, and B, they know that they are better at being liberal than CNN. And I just have to point out that the Wrap found that he's been hemorrhaging viewers since his brother.
Yeah, well, that would make sense.
It was his lowest month ever in total viewers.
Yeah, I mean, this would make sense. I would just say at least they did the right thing, at least temporarily, by letting it go. Fox News has a bigger share because people want the opposing point of view. You're not going to get the opposing point of view from that networks in general. But for example, so what we'll be looking at here in the days to come is, yes, Fox News, and Nick Knight, Train Fondacaro had this, Fox News is actually covering the Waukesha thing, where the other ones really don't want to do that anymore. And Fox is probably where you're going to find anything on the Jussie Smollett trial. So there's a reason. There's a reason that Fox does well. And we'll try to note this pattern of omission. Omission's got to be part of what we do in the Biden years. So come around once, twice, 24 times a day. And thanks for listening to us.